What we have to do is address the difficult discussion, race. If we talk about it, we'll educate ourselves, we'll better understand race, and celebrate the differences of others. It is not a bad conversation. And it has to be multiple conversations that we engage in. We've got to talk. Don't let someone else guide your thinking and your views. Educate yourself. Encourage others to engage in that conversation. Then you will begin to see transformation occurring in areas that are not your comfort zone, but have a positive impact on the region as a whole.
This is the L3 Leadership Podcast, episode number 178. What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the L3 Leadership Podcast. My name is Doug Smith, and I'm the founder of L3 Leadership. In this episode, you're going to get to hear a talk from Dr. Quentin Bullock, who's the president of the Community College of Allegheny County. Just a little bit about Dr. Bullock. He's been the president of CCAC since 2014, and prior to that, he was a college president at a community college in New York, and prior to that, a provost at a community college in Virginia. And I've had the privilege of meeting with Dr. Bullock several times, and I think he is a tremendous leader. And I personally love the work he does, because I actually attended the community college he is president of currently. Out of high school, my life was a mess, if you know my story. And I really had no other options for college other than community college. And I went there and I had a tremendous experience. In fact, several of the professors at the community college of Allegheny County became mentors in my life and really helped me along in my journey. So I'm incredibly grateful for the work that he does on a daily basis. Another couple random facts about Dr. Bullock. He has a doctorate in dental surgery, and you'll hear him talk about that. And something that I found out during his talk is he has actually been deemed Pittsburgh's brisket boss, which you'll hear him talk about in this episode, which is awesome. And I'll include a link to that article in the show notes as well. In the talk, you'll hear Dr. Bullock share his story. He'll share his top leadership lessons and give practical examples, which I love. And then he answers a few questions from the audience. And so you're going to love this talk. But before we dive into the talk, just a few announcements. First and foremost, I want to encourage all of you to become members of L3 Leadership. Our vision here is very simple. We want to connect and develop leaders in order to help them maximize their potential. And we believe that every leader needs a group of leaders around them that will encourage them, challenge them, and hold them accountable. And that's exactly what we provide through membership. When you become a member, you'll have the ability to join or start one of our mastermind groups. You'll have access to our community of over 100 leaders. And you also have access to all the tools and resources that you need to take your life and leadership to the next level. If you want to learn more about becoming a member, go to l3leadership.org/membership. I also want to thank our sponsor, Babb Inc. Babb's an insurance broker, third-party administrator, and consulting firm led by my friend Russell Livingston, who's extremely passionate about developing next-generation leaders, and that's exactly why he hosts our monthly leadership events. We're so grateful for them. And the two nonprofits that I work for, we recently started using Babb as our broker, and it's been a fantastic experience, so I encourage you to check them out. If you want to learn more about what they do, go to babbins.com. That's babbins.com. And lastly, I want to thank our other sponsor, Alex Tulandon, who is a full-time realtor with Keller Williams Realty. If you're looking to buy or sell a house in the Pittsburgh market, Alex is your guy. He's a member and a supporter of L3 Leadership, and he would love the opportunity to connect with you. You can learn more about Alex and connect with him at PittsburghPropertyShowcase.com. With all that being said, let's dive right into Dr. Bullock's talk, and I'll be back at the end with a few announcements.
Good morning, everyone. Isn't it amazing how 35-degree weather feels warmer? When we get up and we walk outside, say, wow, it feels great. It's warm. Versus the minus 10 degrees that we experienced over the last 2 weeks. Let me first extend my thanks and appreciation to Doug Smith and Russell Livingston for the partnership and the invitation to come and speak with you, having an informal conversation about leadership. One of my passions, the things that I have made a commitment to do and throughout my career, and being able to see the results and have an impact on an individual's personal growth and development and to put them on a trajectory that takes them wherever they choose to go. What I've prepared for you, you gave me a 5-page list of questions. And I said, we'll be here all weekend if we go through every one of those questions. So what I tried to do was to summarize my thoughts on what you suggested in your inquiries in the document front and back before you. Before I start, I think it's important that I share my background, let you know how I got where I am, and how it will relate to what we're going to talk about today. You're probably hearing in my voice that I'm not a Pittsburgher. There's a Southern twang in that voice, and I'll slip and use some terms every now and then because it's who I am. I'm a Texan, born and raised in Houston, family four, brother, two sisters, mother, grandparents, mother and father divorced early on, raised by a single mother. All of us went to college, and all of us are doing well. Unfortunately, I lost my older sister this past June, unexpectedly, to cancer. I always had a goal because my parents were both educators, teachers, principals. My grandmother, teacher. My grandfather, postman. Remember, years ago, in the 50s and 60s, many African American families were teachers, postmen, and nurses. You were a middle class citizen as a teacher and a postman. Fast forward, similar experiences today. I never wanted to be a teacher because my parents were teachers and it was a daily ritual. Come home, do your homework. We all sit at the same table, eat dinner together. Does that really happen now? We talk, have that conversation to learn about you and to keep you focused on what you're going to do. So the discipline was there. So when we talk about single family leadership and the ability to keep a family connected and engaged, I can testify that it does work. It does require a very strong mother or father that has a commitment to keep their children going in the right direction. I remember in my first grade, Miss Edith Stone, whose husband was, she's African American, her husband was one of the first surgeons, OBGY, in Houston. And he came to bring her something at the school. And we were looking out the window, and this long car drove up. I said, wow, what is that? It's a Cadillac. And he came in, and he talked, and he introduced himself. And she said, this is my husband, Dr. Stone. I said, wow, what kind of car is that? He said, it's a Cadillac. So I remember that when I grow up, I want to be a doctor. So throughout my entire education, I focused on my math and my science, and I always wanted to be a medical doctor. I went off to school. In my second year in college at Purdue A&M University, Historical Black College University, my mother was in a very critical accident and became disabled. We continue on through college. I am now ready to go into med school, knocking at the door, and I get a call that my grandmother has passed, and my mother's the only child. She's disabled. I'm the only one not married, so what do you think I do? I move home to take care of my mother. All right? So I gave up my medical pathway, came home, started teaching school, because she told me, get your certification. And I got my certification, and I started teaching high school science. While teaching, my principal said, you should consider administration. I said, absolutely not. I'm going back to school. But I went on and earned my master's in biology and chemistry because that's my passion. And I was an excellent urban high school science teacher. I know the discipline. I know how to engage. I know how to get results. Fast forward. Everyone has to go to a dentist. I went to a dentist to have my work done while talking. I just ask questions. What's a dentist? What is required? He says, I'm a surgeon. You're a surgeon. Wow. What does it take? He said, you have to take a test. You have to go to dental school. And you graduate. What do you think I did? Took that test, applied to the one school in Houston, and I got in dental school. So I am a trained doctor of dental surgery. My purpose then went on. I went on and began teaching in a community college because what I wanted to see was how can I engage more persons that look like me in advancing in the sciences and in healthcare. And you could do that through the community college because the community college has a very non-traditional population that enter into our doors. By doing that and seeing someone that looks like you, you have a totally different motivation because they want to know how did you get to where you are? And you share that experience. And that's what I did. I met a young lady in Rochester, New York, while I was on my call at the hospital, at Genesee Hospital. I was still trying to be that medical surgeon, being a dentist, working in the hospital. And she said, we are launching this program at Murray Community College to work with underrepresented youth to get more into our pipeline for science and healthcare. Can you volunteer to introduce youth into the sciences? I said, I don't know how I can do it. I'm on call. If my schedule permits, I will volunteer. So at least twice a month, I was able to go to the school, do some labs, engage the youth for over a period of time. Fast forward, I'm ready to return to Texas, and they opened this new position, Center for Urban Education, focused on science and healthcare. And they encouraged me to apply. I said, no, going home, continue my practice. But she was so convincing until I said, I'll give you 1 year. That year has turned into 27 years. 27 years. After serving about 5 years, demonstrating the experiences of assessment, program development, student engagement, program grant writing, generating funds for the college, I was called into an office by the president, Dr. Peter Spina, who was the president, and said, Dr. Bullock, we want you to be the interim campus CEO for our new urban campus. I looked, I said, me? Because I'm not a trained administrator. Everything I've done has been experiences that I learned on the job. Because I can listen. Scientists are critical, analytical thinkers, strategic. We know how to act quickly on our feet. So I said, I'll be honored to do it. While they do a search. Well, the search failed. I served for 1 year. So I thought, well, this is a failed search. Why not throw my hand in? But before I did, I went to him and I said, you know, of all the years that I went to college, I do not recall anyone saying I'm going to college to be a college president. So what does it take to be a college president? He said, you have to have a PhD, an EdD. I said, why? He said, what do you mean why? I said, because we offer dental hygiene, dental assistance here, taught by dentists. We have a nursing program taught by nurses. So you're saying that anyone in healthcare cannot advance through the institution? He had to think about it. He said, you raise a very good point. And I said, well, mentor me and tell me what I need to do to be a college president. And he did. Told me which courses to take, gave me major assignments, and allowed me to follow my dream. So I worked with Monroe Community College for a total of 11 years. And after experiencing that, I said, I want to test the waters against all odds. He was retiring, so I thought, he's leaving, I could leave too. So I applied and became provost at Tidewater Community College in Virginia. A provost is the senior executive academic student affairs leader. This was a multi-campus, 40,000 students, dentist. All right? Every interview I've ever had wants to know, how is the dentist in this position? And I can answer the question. So I served as a provost, as a senior academic student affairs leader at Tidewater for 7 years. Then I said, I'm ready to test the waters. After working with Dr. Deborah DeCroce, who also served as a mentor, I applied for a presidency. Wanted another big college. They won't give you a big college your first attempt. And I got the presidents of Schenectady County Community College back in New York. And one of the things that I realized that I can do very well is I can assess, I can transform and I can deliver. And what I'm going to share with you is that leadership is not a popularity. It's a passion, and it's the ability to deliver. What attracted me to Pittsburgh was, one, the history of CCAC, its comprehensiveness, and its long tenure and commitment to the community and workforce development. Pittsburgh was also a city on the transformation. 70s, 80s, steel mills leave, city looking for its new identity. And now it's recognized as the EDS, MEDS, and TECHS. On the horizon, we have Amazon potentially coming here. Who's going to be the ideal leader? Community College is going to have a lead role because of our commitment to workforce development and training. So that's my personal journey from a person who says I don't want anything to do with the classroom, nothing to do with education, and here I am, college president for Community College, very non-traditional. There was one other dentist in all of higher ed that served as a college president outside of dental school or medical school. So I'm speaking of a two-year experience. There was one other dentist that was in Florida that has served in this capacity. So what I prepared for you that you, hopefully will offer you some guidance, and we're going to talk through it. The qualities of leadership: vision, motivators, and listeners. Because generally when someone is seeking a leader, they want a leader to come in and embrace the culture. Look at what the vision was. Now put your vision on the institution to move us to that next level of growth and development. To do that, we have to bring persons on board. That's motivation. You got to get them on board, get them engaged, get some buy-in. And what I remember Dr. Pink Speeder telling me, he said, Bullock, you're not going to get everyone to support what you want. He said, I want you to remember this. I want you to remember a third, a third, and a third. He said, a third is in, with you 100% from the very beginning, because that's how you got here. Another third, keep talking, keep nurturing, keep giving them information, they're going to get on board. You have two-thirds. This last third, you can do anything you want to do. It'll never be right. It'll never be anything they want to do. And everything you're doing is wrong. So move with the two-thirds, and some of those last one-thirds are going to join the team gradually. But remember, you can move on with your greater percentage. And that's really what I do, is I go with the majority, keep looking for opportunities to continue to engage the remaining portion. Throughout your experiences, you have to listen. Always listen. Do a listening tour. When I came to CCAC, we have 4 campuses, 5 centers. I visited every campus, every center. One of the things that we were doing up until 2 years ago, we have a nursing program on each campus. You do nursing pinnings in December and in May. So imagine one person, 4 different nursing pinnings in December, 4 different nursing pinnings in May. And how many do the others go to? 1. So I said, this is crazy. But I listened to why they were doing it, and then I suggested, get everyone together. Let's talk about what can we do differently to demonstrate one college. Because everyone's diploma says the Community College of Allegheny County. No diploma says North Campus, Allegheny Campus, South Campus, West Mifflin Center. It says the Community College of Allegheny County. Get in a room, discuss it, bring back a proposal. Today, one ceremony in December and one ceremony in May. We bring them all together, celebrate the student successes, But in order to get there, I had to listen to them complain as to why. Nod and say, I understand, but figure it out. Come back with your proposal, and we'll work with you. I also said, look for efficiencies. We're paying four different events, four different receptions. We save money now because we do the May pinning because we use the University of Pittsburgh Basketball Center. We haven't rented for the whole day. We have the stage set up. So we do the pinning in the early afternoon. Same stage, same microphone, same flowers, same facility, same parking, everything. At 6 o'clock, we do the commencement. Same stage, same flowers, same everything. Didn't cost us anything extra other than two receptions. So we do the reception for one on one floor while the others are coming in, getting ready for the graduation. So we save money, right? So you have to really help them see the efficiencies and show them how to make a difference. As a leader, you have to have your own personal values. You know, don't get caught in lying because they will catch you. Trust me. Everyone is listening, looking for the opportunity, looking for something to say, I told you so. I knew that. I knew something about the way he looked with that beard on his face. I knew it was something. You have to always be truthful. Be ethical. Lead by example because everyone wants to see who you are. Are you true to what you're doing? And are you really committed to the cause in which you're leading? That builds trust, which is the foundation of any leader. It's that trust. Because if you walk out to the edge of the hill, others will follow you. But if you're standing back on the even plains, but go on out there. He's not out there, so why would I go? So you have to walk out there with him so they see the sense that you're in this with us. And that makes the biggest difference. And they will always want to follow you. Have I had similar challenges? Of course. Because I'm coming into an institution, 50 years old, with a tradition. Now here's this guy. They think I'm from New York initially, but I'm really a Texan. And once I start talking, they realize, well, you're not from New York. You're from Texas. And I drive a truck. You know, so. Every Texan drives a truck, which is a little different for a college president, but I pull up in my Ford pickup. One of the interesting phenomenals about leading is you have to always be learning. Because even though you may have gone through a leadership training program, which I had the pleasure of doing, each opportunity you get, look for new opportunities to further advance. The other way you do it is you hire where you know you need extra support. So you may not be the best financial person. So you hire your strong finance leader. You may not be the strongest academic person. So you hire a stronger academic leader. So you balance out your leadership team with people that you hire. Because they are committed to work collaboratively with you to help you build the organization as a whole. One of the things you were doing before coming in was networking, talking with each other. That is a requirement. Be able to interact, get out of your comfort zone, reach over and say, how are you doing? Your name is, what do you work? If you find yourself timid, I don't like crowds, I don't know who she is. I don't like that hat on her head. She looks like she's mean. Well, get on over there and introduce yourself and get to know them because people want to know who you are. Have a sense of humor. I probably have one of the best sense of humor once you get to know me. If you don't get to know me, you think, wow, that man is a mean old man. I'm really not mean, you know, but I'm committed to the purpose. But my office is always lively and looks forward to coming to work. The other thing that I think is important is to participate in community organizations through volunteerism. When I hear Doug speak about his commitment to the community and working with the homeless and supporting those without, that's a commitment. When I hear Russell talk about his outreach, his efforts at his church and trying to make a difference and sponsoring events like this. Russell could be sitting at home and looking at a video to learn how to improve his swing on golfing. But he's here, you know. So volunteer. I probably serve on more boards than I probably should be on. But it keeps me engaged, keeps the community college message out in front, and also gets people to know me. How many of you have been to a movie at Cinema Max? Raise your hand. It's okay. It's no trick question. All right. Did you see anyone that you recognize in the movie? Let me ask a question. How many go to a movie early? Only a few. Most people rush in the last minute and say, excuse me, and we try to watch the movie. But if you went in early, I showed up on a lot of the screens. Welcome you to the community college. We had our video and promoting the college on the screen. And I'll be sitting in the, because I like movies, so I'll be sitting in the thing and you can see people go, well, I just smile. You know, so it's that personal touch where people see, wow, is that man down there? And I just look, you know, never acknowledge that that's me. Another thing is that be proactive in your actions, your steps, you know, how you strategically move your agenda along, you know, think futuristic, engaging, encouraging. All of it will contribute to your preparation. Now, in any leadership, there will be obstacles. What obstacles do you think there will be? What do you think some of them could be? What do you think? Give me some thoughts. All right. Getting everyone on board of the team. Yes, that's one. What's another? That's number one. Opposition to change. And it's not what you're doing is working, just because it's what we do. All right? And they just like what they do, like to complain, don't let go. We've been driving down this street for 20 years. Why do I need to go another way? Well, the street is closed now, so how do you think you're going to get through? You've got to change, you know? But what I listed here, development may be stressful and overwhelming. Can you relate to that? That's bringing on change, looking for strategies to navigate what you've identified as a major obstacle in order to make change in the organization. The culture may be difficult to read. If you've ever stood in front of a group, what do you generally see everyone doing? You see one head doing this. I see 30 heads doing what? This. All right? We call it the bobbin head syndrome. All right? Either they are on board listening, or they're saying, would he hurry up and sit down? All right? All right? So you have to kind of read the audience to see, are you making an impact in your comments, or are they just waiting for you to say, thank you, enjoy your day, they applaud you, and exit before you even get off the stage. But you have to be persistent in that. That's leadership. You cannot allow your audience to see what your trigger points are. And trust me, they touch my trigger points all the time, but they can never read me. Because I'll smile. Inside, I'm probably saying other things, but I'm smiling, all right? All right? You know, and you have to do that. You have to be able to read body language. And if you see that what you're doing is not impacting, what should you do? Change. Just change direction. No one knows what's on the paper but you, right? So you can do that. The other is don't always take the easy way out. Take on the challenges, because the challenges are the things that are going to make the most impact, because the challenges will open other challenges that lead to greater results. Because a lot of times there's a foundation that is impacting what we are doing that cannot change until that major foundation is really addressed. And that's the culture. Be careful of what people tell you about other leaders. We always like to talk and say, well, you know, Bullock thinks he knows everything. Well, you know, he think he could do what he did in New York here. We ain't going to do any of that. Mm-hmm. Don't listen to them. Get your own views, your own thoughts. Do what you think is best. Follow your mind. Don't let someone else be your brain. Be your own brain. Make your own decisions. And stick to those decisions as you go forward. I'm a very strong faith believer. I believe in the powers above. I pray daily. I live by faith. I read my book. That gives me the foundation that I need to do the work that I do. I attend Ebenezer Baptist Church in Hill District. You can see, Lance can attest that I do go to church. I don't say I'm going to church. I do go to church. I do go to church. And I sit toward the front. I don't sit in the back. And I enjoy the service. I contribute to the service. All right? I contribute to the ministries every way that I can. I lead what we call the Men of Merit. I have so many programs. That's the CCAC one. We have a men's group. What is the men's group? We have a men's group that I lead. That's an acronym. And I'm lost for my words right now. But we do something every quarter. And one of the recent things was we launched a choral that we sing. Bring the men up. They do a good job. We do a good job. And we did this summer. First time we've ever did it was we provided a meal for the church. We prepared the meal. I should say I prepared the meal. I'm a pretty good culinary person. And we prepared food for 150 people from scratch. No canned goods. Right, which included, I'm known for, and you can look it up, I've only been here 4 years, and I've made it to Pittsburgh Magazine as brisket boss. So look it up, it's in there, Pittsburgh Magazine, Bullock, brisket boss. I host a barbecue every year and invite family and friends, a member of my church to my home. Generally about 50 people, and I prepare the meal for 50 people, barbecue. As a part of our annual way that I can contribute to the college, I will donate a barbecue. Last year it raised $8,500. I prepared a barbecue for 60 people, and they paid the foundation $8,500. So I didn't have $8,500 to give. So through my contribution, that was my way of adding to what I'm able to contribute to the college as a way of doing it. Now, I said that to say, you're doing what? Letting people see you, not just a college president, but you're human. You're another person. You do things that normal people do, right? Because a lot of times when you're in these positions, people think you're unapproachable. You're snobbish. You can't relate to me. That's not who I am. I've never been that person, never will be that person. I'm always be the common Quentin Buller, all right? One thing I learned a few years back, and I haven't done it in several years, but everyone needs something last minute. No one's going to be in the storm and run out and get something right quick, right? So I put on some sweats and ran out, ran to the store. Probably not the best sweats I could have put on, but I did. And you could see the people looking, that looks like Dr. Bullock. And they said, you Dr. Bullock? I said, no, that's my brother. Haven't done that anymore. You know, because you didn't want, you know, the telephones, they do what? They start picturing and they posting on Facebook. And there I am, President Bullock's all in the store looking like homeless man or something, you know. So I guess that is one time I didn't tell the truth, but it's okay. Let's look at the next point, proactive steps. Assess and take high-risk assignments. Develop a reputation for excellence. So whatever you do, you want to always do what? Be recognized for doing excellent work. Yielding results. Getting people on board. achieving positive outcomes. Monitor your behavior at all times. Develop competence. Let people see that you are knowledgeable, you're scholarly, you know how to do your research, you know how to talk, you know how to read, you know how to deliver. All of that helps to define a leader. Remember, I'm your non-traditional leader. I'm not the leader who earned a PhD in administration leadership. I am the biologist, the dentist, and a scholar in my own rights that I have taken advantage of to really excel myself. I've attended Harvard. I did the leadership program. I've attended the Wharton School, get my leadership development. But regardless of those abilities to say you've done that, that's not what's important to me. I did that because I needed to grow and I needed to be engaged. And when you need to drop those names, I do stand up and say, I went to Harvard, did the leadership program. Guess who went there with me? Dr. Chris Howard, who's now the president at Robert Morris University. You know, we were there together, same program. He said it before I said it, but when I heard the name, I said, why do I know that name? When I saw the picture, we have the same barber. I said, now I know. All right. So it was good to see, fast forward several years later, we are in the same city, committed to continue our work in higher education. Let's go to the back page. How much time do I have, Doug? 10 minutes. All right. Move from managing to getting the job done. This is from not just doing it, but transforming, putting into place something permanent where you can feel it's being operationalized with key strategies in place. So if I leave, the operation continues to go. Let me give you an example. I was criticized for coming in and changing a system that I thought was antiquated, but I didn't change it until I understood it. We serve almost 45,000 students annually. So imagine 45,000 applicants, paper. Not one sheet, multiple sheets of paper. What does paper allow to occur? Human error. Because if you're behind and I come in and complain, you have sitting next to your desk something called a shredder. So you just go, oh, I've never seen that document. Right? Because you can't argue it. You don't have a paper trail. So I stopped the process. We used to do what's called deregistration. Probably read about it in the paper where they were crucifying me on the cross. But I stood firm with what I believe, that we're not going to continue to touch paper. We're going to bring the college into the 21st century and integrate technology. We're going to also hold our students accountable. I don't think community college students are any less than anyone else. They are equal to any other college. The only difference is they chose to come to the community college. Therefore, you make a commitment to register. You have every right to do what? Drop your registration. I'm not going to try to read you to see, Cassandra, are you going to come back here in the spring? No. If you go to Macy's and buy a suit or a dress or a pair of shoes, you have a receipt that says what the return policy is. Macy's not going to call you and say, Quentin, are you going to wear that suit or do you want us to take it off your credit and come up and pick up the suit? They're not going to do that. But that's what we did. We assume because you registered, but you haven't paid, that you're not going to come. I don't assume that. You bought it. It's on the credit card. You're going to pay for it. That's the same philosophy I brought to how we manage it. So we have now removed paper. Everything is electronically facilitated. You acknowledge it as a student. So it's now your responsibility to do whatever you want to do. But you owe the bill. I took a lot of scars with that, but we celebrate now because the operations are very efficient and very 21st century forward. The next initiative was to integrate how do we pay. You live in Erie, but you're taking online class. I'm telling you, you need to come in and pay your bill. I live in Erie. I know where you live. You need to come in and pay your bill. So you're going to tell someone who lives 120 miles in Erie to drive to Pittsburgh to pay a bill. Would you go to Sears in Erie to pay your bill? No. So we put in place new technologies that you can go online, process your payment plan, identify a third-party payer, get on a student payment plan, assign your grant dollars right in your own home. More efficiency. So those are the tough challenges as leaders you have to do. Assess it, make tough calls, change. But what do you think the greatest concern was? You're taking my job. Because they see it as you're trying to get rid of me. No, you can be retrained to do something different. That is also a need. So those are things you just have to constantly do. So you're not a very popular leader in the beginning. Over time, if you persisted, because I have the support now, but it was a tough first year. I mean, it was a tough year. Every day I think I was in the paper for something, you know. Let's look at the next thing. Communication. Effective leadership, being able to talk, communicate, engage, lead. How do you think I'm doing? Am I doing all right? Show me by a round of applause. Some of these same characteristics are there, the critical analytical skills. Why is that important? You want to utilize your data to help guide decisions, be able to gather certain data to help guide conversations, to help support recommendations and fundings that you may need to support whatever decision you're going to do. Listen, be a team player. We cannot lead by ourselves. You have to have a team. And that team has to be representative of the entire organization so that you have an ear in every area of the organization so that he or she will do what? Keep you informed. You don't need to let them know who you are, but there has to be someone in every area to keep you informed on things that you need to be aware of so that it helps you guide your conversation. And then you can read the rest of those. I like to model, I like to lead, and I like results. If you embrace those key elements, you are well positioned to be a leader in any organization that you choose to do. Don't let someone tell you what you can't do. One thing we all know is we know what our strengths are, and we also know our weaknesses. Address the weaknesses without someone telling you what they are. Just do it. It's okay. And then use that to further support your ultimate goal. Read, read, read. I shared some of my top books that I have read that you will find, you know, Colin Powell, former leader in the military. He speaks about how leadership had an impact on him as a leader in the military component, from good to great. Collins, everyone knows about that. The aha moment, you know. So it's those types of books that can motivate you, engage you, give you new ideas and strategies that you can bring forth and offer to others in your leadership role. And my last comment is, if the opportunity exists, whatever your passion is, contribute that to the audience that you're in. Why do I say that? Because that allows the audience to see you in a different light. I teach one class once a year, generally the fall. This past fall, I taught medical terminology. Generally, I do anatomy or biology, but I needed something that wasn't as demanding because of my schedule. But it allowed me to interact with students, and I come in dressed like this, and you can see them looking and saying, they have the phone, I know what they're doing. They're Googling to see if that's me on the front page of the website. And then some person would say, are you the president of the CCA? I said, yeah. I said, why are you teaching? I said, because I want to learn about you. I want to contribute to your education, growth, and development. And I want to give you some of the pointers that I learned while in college to help you earn your goal. And by teaching in the sciences, things that sometimes are very challenging and complex, it's very natural to me. And I start the class off by asking, does anyone know a stranger? They look at me. No one knows a stranger. And I ask it again. I said, does anyone know a stranger? No one knows a stranger. So I said, okay, let's see. Someone stand and tell me about your integumentary system. They look at me. I said, everyone should be standing. I said, I don't know about the integumentary. I said, but you said you don't know a stranger. Does anyone know what the integumentary system is? What is the largest organ of your body? That is the integumentary system. All right? So I use that to say, why do you need to learn science? Because you need to know who you are. So when you go in the doctor and he tells you that you have 120 over 80, you don't say, oh, that's good, versus 200 over 190. And you say, oh, that's good. No, that's not good. All right? You know? It's an important thing. And then I help them to learn how to learn complex things. I said, any national exam, and I taught like it was a national exam. I did multiple choices, and they would think, oh, my God, this man is horrible. I said, but you'll understand it later because you want to be a nurse, you want to be a PA, you want to be medical doctor. So I'm teaching you what you're going to be expected to learn. And they mastered it. So if you're in a test, you're stressed. Where's your tricuspid? Where's your bicuspid? They go, oh, no, no. I said, remember the jersey 32. Tricuspid, bicuspid, 3, 2. You'll never forget it. You won't. Just remember 32. 3, tri, 2, bi, tricuspid, bicuspid. And you can see them learning those basic learning tips that I was taught. So that's what I do. This is who I am. Thank you for the opportunity and much success to all of you.
So, first of all, thank you for your comments. And I actually have two questions, if I could indulge you. The first one is, you stated in the last portion of your speech about passion. And I wanted to get your comments on what role passion plays in leading. That would be the first question. Second question is, Pittsburgh tends to be not as inclusive as some communities. And I'm part of both professional and civic organizations that have a long history. And we've been really focusing on inclusion and find it a very difficult road. And I wanted to see if you had some suggestions on steps that you would suggest where, you know, I always say that I'm the old white guy, but, you know, very open to inclusion and diversity, and any suggestions you might have on approaching, you know, people that don't look like me to get involved in things that we're passionate about.
Good. Too good. Two good questions, passion and diversity and inclusion. I think passion is something that you acquire. Anything that you really like to do, you will generally demonstrate that very openly. If you like sports, you're going to be engaged watching the sports. If you like fishing, you're going to be engaged in going out fishing. If you don't like people, should you really be a customer service representative? Have you ever called someone and it's almost like they're mad because you called? But this is the helpline. This is the office that addresses concerns. It's almost like, can I help you? And one of my pet peeves, and this is my pet peeve, may not be your pet peeve. My name is Quentin Bullock. You've never met me. And I come to you. My name is not Quentin. My name is Mr. Bullock. Or you say Quentin Bullock. I think it's very unprofessional when someone first meet you to call you by your first name. That's a Southern thing. All right? Now, once you get to know me, I'm known as QB. No one calls me Quentin. Everyone calls me QB because I tell them I am QB, not Quentin. Now, once you get to know who I am and you ask me, can I call you Quentin? That's fine. But if you call, and I'm just saying me, all right? Because you generally give your full name as I am John Doe. Okay, Mr. Doe, Mrs. Doe. And then allow them to say, you may call me John. Right? That's Southern rearing. That's just who I am. Diversity and inclusion. I've had the experiences in living in the South and living in the North. So I could share the experiences in both. You really didn't know there was anything different until I moved to the North. Because living in the South, Southwest is a totally different culture than the North. The North is very liberal. Remember, I said I've been out 27 years, so I must like it, right? But it also helped me to understand how to value differences. Because everywhere I've moved, I start over. I integrate into the community. When I first moved, I always went to the urban community because that's where my comfort was. That's where I live in Houston. Then I realized in order for me to grow, I have to live in a community that looks different than me. I live in North Hills. It makes me find out who my neighbors are. It makes them learn who I am. Of course, they're like, oh my God, he's moving in. Who is he? What's that he driving? How many kids does he have? I always tell people I have 10 children. They almost pass out. But I don't have any children, but I generally start out with that. It's how many children I have? 10. They look at you. I think I did that with Doug. Yeah. So in Rochester, we had a program called the Mosaic, led by Dr. William Johnson. And his goal was to integrate the community so that we would strengthen diversity and inclusion across the Rochester community and region. You would pair with someone that was different than you. So you couldn't go and pair with an African-American. You had to pair with someone in a different culture. I was paired with a Jewish family. You had to go into their environment, and they had to come into your environment. So, of course, when they came to my environment, I was all ready. I fixed them a Southern meal. Pork bones, collard greens, yams, cornbread, fried chicken. That's my environment. Why would I do Swiss steak and gravy and asparagus? That's not who I am. I wanted them to learn who I was. I had it smelling too. So when you walked in, you walk out, you smell like what I was cooking. All right? But what it did, it allowed them to better understand me. And then I was invited to their environment. Very quiet, very controlled, very focused, but we got to know and appreciate and celebrate each other's values. I'm a member here in this community with what's called the Blueprint Organization that was launched a little over a year ago for the purpose of engaging different diversity groups across the Pittsburgh area. How many of you have heard of the Blueprint? It's now known as All in All, but it started out as a Blueprint and is now known as All in All. And the intent is to engage different cultures with each other and to strengthen the opportunities of diverse groups across Pittsburgh. All right? So there are opportunities. You have to push yourself. I spoke last week at Clarion University for MLK program. And in the room, don't know Clarion that well, but remember Clarion, up north, in the mountains, in the back, in the cold. And here's this African-American man coming to speak. Everyone's in the audience looking like this, focus. And I asked the person, I said, what is it like to live here? And she said, well, there are 18 African-Americans in this entire town. 18. She's been there 23 years. Guess where she's from? Houston. We had never met until 2 years ago at a conference when she said she worked at Clarion, and she invited me up to be their keynote speaker for their MLK program. 23 years. She's survived. She's transformed. She's engaged. They love her. She's retiring. And they hate it. But she pushed herself to learn and get in an environment that perhaps is a little or not comfortable. Pittsburgh has that same culture. What we have to do is address the difficult discussion. Race. If we talk about it, we'll educate ourselves, we'll better understand race, and celebrate the differences of others. It is not a bad conversation. And it has to be multiple conversations that we engage in. We've got to talk. Don't let someone else guide your thinking and your views. Educate yourself. Encourage others to engage in that conversation. Then you will begin to see transformation occurring in areas that are not your comfort zone, but have a positive impact on the region as a whole.
So, and unfortunately, we're out of time for questions. But Dr. Bullock, am I saying it right? I want to call you Mercy Boss. That was like the highlight of the
top. How many of you looked it up while I was up here talking?
Question I always like to end with, and then we'll have some time for table discussions, but how can we serve you as a person of faith? How can we pray for you? And if people are passionate about what you do at CCAC, how can they get involved in shaping the next generation of the workforce?
Encourage individuals to consider community college as a first step into higher education or workforce training. Identify a person who perhaps hasn't pursued education and encourage them to consider the community college as a door. Make financial contributions to the Educational Foundation to support our scholarships, our mission, our vision, our future goals and development, and support events that are hosted by the college. Come in and show your face, say hello, engage, and offer any constructive criticism that would further help us to advance the college to new heights and beyond.
Well, hey, everyone, thank you so much for listening to Dr. Bullock's talk. I hope it added value to your life. You can find ways to connect with Dr. Bullock and links to everything that he talked about in the show notes at l3leadership.org/episode178. I want to thank our sponsor, Henny Jewelers, owned by my friend and mentor, John Henny. My wife, Laura, and I got our engagement and wedding rings through Henny Jewelers, and we just love them as a company. Not only do they have great jewelry, but they also invest in people. In fact, John gave Laura and I a book to help us prepare for our marriage, and he's consistently been investing in me as a leader, a husband, and a father now for years. And if you're in need of a good jeweler, check out hennyjewelers.com. As always, thank you so much for being a listener. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and share this on social media and leave a rating and review. It really does make a difference, so thank you in advance for that. And if you want to stay up to date with everything we're doing here at L3 Leadership, you can simply go to our website and sign up for our email list at l3leadership.org. I always like to end with a quote, and I'll quote Gerald Brooks, who I quote often. He said this, he said, "Often people confuse having a promise for having a destiny. In reality, it's discipline which creates destiny." I love that. Thanks for listening and being a part of L3 Leadership. Laura and I appreciate you so much, and we'll talk to you next episode.